Have you ever felt like that? I think every single mom probably has at one time in her life. So how do we survive? Well, I'd like to give you two stories, first of all, of personal friends of mine. One I will call Jewel. This lady has 11 children. She delights in her children. She counts them her blessings. Homeschool is not a drudgery to her or a necessary evil. She takes time to research good curriculum and books. And she has a home that is truly a haven to her children. They love being with her. It's obvious. And her children are happy and obedient and respectful. The last time we were there at their house, when the meal was over, she didn't say a word to those children, but they got up. I'd say they were like 8, 10, 12. And the table was cleared. The dishwasher was loaded and started, the crumbs were swept, and the mother hadn't said a word. But they knew what they were supposed to do, and they did it. And then I have another friend who I will call Betsy. She has a teaching degree. She has 7 children. She homeschooled, I forget if it was 3 or 4 of them. And she tried to teach her homeschool just like you would a traditional school. And her Saturdays were spent in making detailed lesson plans for the next week. Well, you can imagine what happened. She started feeling bogged down, and actually she just started sinking deeper and deeper into despair, and eventually she was just swallowed up and quit homeschooling. So then they put their children in Christian school, and she actually went to the Christian school and taught some subjects, and her home was like a depot for her children. It was a place where they would eat and sleep, while each family member was just pursuing their own interests. And nighttime was the only time that whole family was under that roof together. And by the way, now that those children are grown, you can guess which family is doing better. The first family is doing a lot better than the second one. A lot of those children are not doing well spiritually. So, how can we be a Jewel instead of a Betsy? Well, let me just review a few things. First of all, you have to have the proper foundation. Remember, be a Mary and not a Martha. You know, God didn't call us to be super moms. He just called us to be moms who are super dependent on Him. There's a difference. It's an immense task. We can't do it in our own strength. We need His help. And also, if bad days outnumber the good days, that should be an indicator that we're not listening to the Lord. We're trying to do this in our own strength. We're not discerning the root problems and issues that we need to be dealing with. Remember, we set the tone in our family, so in our home. So if I'm impatient, intense, and irritable, that's the kind of atmosphere that will be there. But if I'm relaxed and cheerful, then that's the kind of atmosphere we'll find. So let's keep our priorities in order. God, husbands, children, and then others. And again, require obedience. If your children haven't learned to obey you as their mother, they will not obey you as their teacher. And so if your children haven't learned to obey, that's going to put you in a survival mode. So teach them to obey instantly, cheerfully, and without whining. So how are some practical ideas? How do you survive? Well, first of all, recognize that everyone has bad days where nothing seems to go right. And also, don't let feelings of inadequacy disturb you and discourage you. I mean, yes, some days you'll feel like, well, what am I accomplishing? And maybe some days you feel like, well, couldn't another school teacher do a better job than I am? Or why can't my children catch on faster? And so when you find yourself having those kinds of thoughts, that should be an indicator. Readjust your focus. Don't harbor those negative thoughts and attitudes. Bring every thought into captivity to Christ Jesus. And then you won't have room for self-pity or resentment toward your husband for not being more involved or whatever. Remember what a blessing and advantage it is to homeschool. And you know, when you're in the midst of it, in the thick of it, it can be so easy to lose sight of those long-term goals. And you know, those long-term goals of building relationships with my children and being able to impart God's wisdom into their lives. All those wonderful privileges we have as mothers. And it can be easy to lose sight of that and just get caught up with the busyness of this day and how am I going to get through this day? And you know, when that happens, it's like those long-term goals get obstructed. It's like wearing blinders over my eyes, that the busyness of this day makes me blind to what really this all is about. It's not about just getting done today what I have to do. It's like, you know what? We as moms have brought eternal souls into this world that will never die. And I, as the mom, have the privilege of imparting God's wisdom into those lives to help make their choices in life much easier toward God than away from Him. It's a wonderful privilege. Let's not lose sight of it. So, we can thank God instead for the specific benefits of homeschool. I have the privilege of instilling godly values into them. I have many more opportunities to build bridges between me and my child. You know, when you send your children off to elementary school, many times they form strong bonds with that teacher. But if you homeschool them, they form that strong bond with you. Ah, that's a blessing. Because when they go through difficult times in their teenage years, you're still there. You're still there for them. Whereas that elementary school teacher, where's that one? And you know, it's also an opportunity to see character flaws in myself and in my children. And I have the privilege of correcting that. And you know, when you're in a home there, you have to learn to get along with a variety of personalities. Now that's a blessing. You know, when you go off to school, you can find children that are easy to get along with your own personality type, and so you just go around with them. When you're at home, you have to learn to get along with each sibling. You can't just ignore a sibling. You have to learn to get along. That's a blessing, because that's right there. You have life lived out in front of you, and you can help your children learn to, even if your personality is very opposite from a sibling, they still have to learn to get along. And you as the mother have the privilege of helping them learn that. Well, how do you survive? Another way is to reduce the distractions and the detractions. That means you might have to make some lifestyle changes if necessary so you have time to homeschool. Maybe you have to reduce the amount of canning or gardening you do. You know, when we started homeschooling, I had to reduce the amount of sewing I did. And be content with less, and also learn to buy things at thrift stores and yard sales. And sometimes even just altering a little bit. And like maybe there was a dress we got one time. Actually, it was given to us, and it would never have worked as a dress. It was too immodest. It had a low neck and short, big sleeves. And so by that time, I had some daughters who were teenagers, and my one daughter looked at that and she said, well, that's not a modest dress, but it will make a really cute jumper. So she took out the sleeves, sewed them up, and just, you know, turned it under and sewed it up, and the neckline was already low, just right for a jumper, and the waist was really big and baggy. She just put some, I think it was a triple row of elastic in there, and it had garish, gaudy gold buttons, and it was a green and white checked jumper. And she just took those off and put really pretty green buttons on it, and it was a really cute jumper. And it didn't cost much, and it didn't take much time to redo. So you might have to learn to do some things like that. Maybe you have to learn to give up some of your fun crafts that it's fun to do right now. You know, remember, we have this time for a very short time. Maybe 18, 20 years, and it's over. So don't waste it. Don't wish it away. Sometimes it seems so busy and so heavy, we forget those kinds of things. Maybe you have to be content with buying some bread instead of making your bread. You know, my husband was very willing to do that, and he much prefers homemade bread. But when I was really, really busy, he was very willing to eat bought bread instead of homemade if I didn't have time to make it. Another thing that helped me was I had to decide on a manageable standard of neatness for our house. It's like, okay, I have these little children. I don't have big ones to help me. I can't keep the house as nice as I would prefer. So I had to decide, okay, what standard of neatness am I willing to work with for this time in our life? and be content. Learn to fix simple meals, very simple. Another thing I did was I did not accept phone calls during school hours. And that helped a lot. Because, you know, if you have a lot of interruptions and distractions, it just takes longer to get done. And you might have to reduce the amount of extracurricular things you do, the things outside your home. Maybe even something like a lot of visits with other families in the evening, because that means then your night gets late and then it's hard to get going in the morning. Cut corners where you have to so that you can make your day work. And if you need another mother's help to do something, then offload her. Maybe you don't know how to sew, and there's a sister in the church that's a wonderful seamstress, and you want to learn how to make a jumper. So you're going to go over, and she's going to teach you how. Then take a crock pot with supper in so that her family, so that she can devote her afternoon to teaching you how to do that. And then once you leave, it's not like, okay, now I have to scramble around and still try to get some supper for my family. You see what I'm saying? Offload each other. If you want help from one mom, then you do something to offload her. And also, don't be too proud to ask for help or admit that something isn't working. Ask other successful mothers for specific ideas. You can look around. It can even be a mother that's younger than you, and you see, oh, she's really successful in doing that. Don't be too proud to ask her how she did it. How do you do that? I want to learn to do that too. Another important thing, if you really want to be able to homeschool efficiently and not be in survival mode, is to learn to delegate. That means don't do everything yourself. Help your children learn to work right alongside with you. You remember in the Bible, in Numbers 3, God told Moses specifically how he should delegate authority to the Levites and how they were supposed to do everything so that the temple duties were done properly. So he did. And it got done beautifully and properly. And you also remember when he was, people would come to him for advice, and it was getting too heavy for him. And his father-in-law said to him, Moses, you need to delegate. Appoint other people that you know are wise, that they can offload you so that you don't have so much on your shoulders. So we as moms need to learn that too. Delegate. Don't be doing things your children should be doing. I remember there were times I felt too busy and I'd go to Ray and I'd say, I'm just not getting done what I should get done. And he would say, Rhoda, you're doing things the children should be doing. So I think, well, that's true. I'm doing this, and Rochelle could be doing that, and Renee doing that. So then I'd, you know, offload some of that, and that would work for a year. And then after a while, I'd think, I'm just too busy. I'm not getting done what I should. And he'd say, Rhoda, you're not delegating. It's like, that's right. These other children are old enough now to do what the older ones are doing. I can hand that down, and the older ones can offload me some more. And, you know, as I learned to do that effectively, it was very true. It made a huge difference, and it got me out of survival mode. That means you have to be willing to teach your children alongside of you as soon as they're old enough, and I talked about that before. Don't view that as a problem. Yes, it's going to slow you down, but if you view that as a problem and say, well, I can do it faster, I'm just going to do it, you're wearing those blinders over your eyes and you aren't looking at that long-term goal of that child working right alongside of you. Remember, that's the time when you form those bonds. That's the time, a wonderful time to form a solid relationship. And also, you're teaching them skills that eventually they can offload you. Because he'll soon get good enough at it that he can do it for you. And you know, if you wait till your child is physically old enough, in other words, they want to help you dust and roll out those buns and vacuum and do the dishes and that kind of thing, and you keep saying, no, 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 and you push them off, because you know good and well you can do it faster. Well, guess what? The day is going to come when he really is old enough just to jump in there and do it. And all his interest is gone. And guess what? You have given yourself a very difficult job now. Now you have to try to get that child to do that job, and he doesn't want to do it, and he's not motivated, and you squelched it all his life long up to this point, and now you want him to do it? You have made your job much, much harder. So Don't do that. Let them help. And yes, they are going to get to the point. All our children did. You know, they were little and they wanted to do the job, and once they learned to do it, oh, then they knew it, and then the fun was over. Well, then that was the time to learn, but you still need to do it. You know, we're a family. We work together. And I remember saying to my children sometimes, would you like if I just sat down and let you do all the work? Oh, no. I said, well, guess what? I don't either. I can't do all the work. We have to work together. And if we don't work together, then I won't have time to read to you. We won't have time to do fun things together. So we'll work together. And that makes it much easier than waiting till they're old enough and then it's like pulling teeth to get them to do stuff and to get them motivated. But, you know, when they are helping you work when they're little, you have to be content with their level of skill. Don't go over their work. Because you know what that teaches them? I can never please Mom. And I've had grown women say that to me. I could never please my mother, so I gave up. I didn't even try. So don't go over their work. If they dusted for you and it's done like a little child will do it, not carefully like the mom will do it, that's okay. They're just learning how. Now, of course, you teach them how to do it, and you want them to do it well, to their level of doing it well. You understand what I mean? A 2-year-old's not going to be able to do it like a 5 or 6-year-old. That's okay. Let them do it at a 2-year-old level. Now, what are some things that little children can do? Well, a 2-year-old can fold washcloths. They love it. Now, it's not as neat as what it would be if you did it, but it's good enough. Let them do it. It won't take long till they learn to do it as perfectly as you do. And they can do it for you all the time. They can pick up their own clothes. They can help make their bed. They can help set the table. They can get dressed with help from an older sibling. They can pick up their toys, and they can help entertain the baby. I was amazed how much my 2-year-old offloaded me when we had our second child. It's like, things that I always had to do before, my 2-year-old is offloading me. It was wonderful. By the time a child is 6 years old, they can make their bed all alone. They can dust and vacuum their own room. They can clear the table and wash the dishes. They can empty the trash cans. They can do lots of things. They can help do the weekly cleaning and dusting. They can sort and fold the wash, peel the potatoes. They can weed the garden, pick the vegetables. They can do a tremendous amount of things, offload you wonderfully. And by the time a child is 8 or 10 years old, they should be able to do easy cooking. By the time a child is 8 or 10, they should be able to cook at least one easy meal. I always had our 8, 10-year-olds know how to make one easy meal. Then if the baby was sick, you know what happens when a baby's sick? They need to be nursed extra much. There's nothing like the comfort of a mother's arms. So that means you have to sit and rock that sick child. So if you have an 8 or 10-year-old, that's okay. They can go ahead and make supper. You still can have supper. But just make it be something easy, whatever that is in your household. I don't know. What it was in our household was just boil some potatoes, cook some hot dogs, open a can of home canned green beans if we had them. If we didn't, then it had to be something else, and some applesauce. Very basic, simple meal. But they could do it. In fact, in Africa, where our daughter is as a Bible translator, a missionary couple lived just several houses down from her, and their little 9-year-old daughter was an excellent cook. The mother was really a wonderful cook. And you know, in Africa, you can't get lots of things that we can in North America. And so sometimes for special, the mother would make really special things like they would have when they were in North America. But if she wanted to make something like lasagna, she had to make her own noodles. She had to make her own cottage cheese. She had to make her own sauce. She had to make her own cheese. So it was a big job to cook from, you know, to make something like lasagna. And she taught her little girl how to do those things, and at 9 years old, that little girl could put a delicious meal on the table in Africa, where you don't just open cans and do things like we do here. So our 9-year-olds could do much more than we often have them doing. You know, we really underestimate children. we think, oh, they're little, they can't do this. Do you know that Charles Wesley, John Wesley, back in their day and age, when they were elementary school children, they learned Greek really well. You know, they could open a Greek New Testament and read it, and we think, oh, Greek, they, you know, children. Oh, a 9-year-old could never learn Greek. You know, we really dumb down our children. We just look at them as dummies, in essence, and they have bright little minds. And we as mothers have the privilege of just encouraging that bright little mind to blossom. It's a wonderful privilege we as mothers have. So help your children learn how to cook. Help them learn, you know, by the time they're 8 and 10, you shouldn't have to bake cookies, bars, if you eat that kind of thing. Some families don't, but even bread. You know, when we lived in New York City, our 10-year-old son baked bread and sold it to the neighbors to earn money. It was a wonderful way for him to earn money. And guess what? It offloaded me, too. So they can wash. They can hang out the wash to dry. I mean, they're almost anything you do, they can do. Remember, it's a privilege to be a part of a family, and we want our children to learn that, too. Children need to experience the joy of being a contributor to the family, not a parasite. Children are learning about reality. And part of that reality is that happiness is based on service, not indulgence. You notice in a family where the children are indulged, they just have everything handed to them, versus a family where they learn to work together and learn what a privilege it is just to be together and work together and play together and do things together. Which one is happier? And which one has a better grasp on the reality of life? How can you survive? Have your boys as well as your girls help out with the housework. I feel that that is very important for them to learn. You know, when our boys had to wash up the kitchen floor, they were very concerned if a younger sibling came into the house and had dirty feet and walked across that floor. The boys were just as concerned as the girls because they helped clean, and they realized, you know what? When you clean something up, you don't want it to be undone just because someone's careless. We had our boys learn to do the basics in cooking, in cleaning, sewing on a button. I think it's pitiful if a husband can't sew his own button on. And while I'm saying that, it's like, if your husband can't do those things, don't think it's your job to teach him. He's your husband, not your son. You married him like he was. Don't try to change him. I'm saying for your sons. Did you get that? For your sons, not your husbands. So, teach your boys those things. Someday they'll know how to offload their wives wonderfully. And your daughters-in-law will thank you. You know, because life is busy. And suppose his button pops off and it's time to go to church. And you're nursing the baby quickly before you leave. Well, guess what? You don't have to stop nursing the baby and sew on the button. Or he doesn't have to go change a shirt. He can just quickly sew on his own button and you're ready to go. By the time you're done nursing the baby, he's ready. Because his button's on his shirt. Another idea is to give assignments to your older children that will specifically benefit a younger one. I did that a lot with oral reading. You know, like I said, my focus wasn't on workbooks, but I did want my children to be able to read orally very well. And so I didn't have time every day to listen to 3 children read aloud. So what I would do was I would listen to one, and then I would have the other ones read to a younger sibling. Now, maybe what the 9-year-old reading to a 3-year-old, the 3-year-old didn't want to listen to the reading book that the 9-year-old was reading to me. That's okay. I would just let him read a child's book that would interest the 3-year-old. It would be above a 3-year-old level, but still, maybe not up to a 9-year-old level. But do you think that 3-year-old is going to sit there and listen if it's read in a monotone and read in a boring way? Absolutely not. So you see, that child was learning, I have to read this with expression. I have to make this interesting if my little sister or my little brother is going to listen. And so that's what I wanted them to learn. So even if they weren't reading the material they were going to read to me the next day, At least they were still getting their practice in oral reading. So then the next day we'd switch, and I'd listen to another one read, and the other one that I'd listened to the previous day could read to the younger ones. And that was entertaining the younger ones. They were getting their oral reading done, and it was offloading me. Sometimes I would give the children a choice. You know how it is right before supper time. You're finishing up those last-minute things, and that little two-year-old is hungry. And guess what? They get fussy. So I would give the children a choice. I would say to an older one, do you want to finish up supper for me, or do you want to read to Ryan or Rosetta or whoever was the two-year-old at the time? I'd give them the choice. Often they'd choose to read a story. Once in a while they'd choose to finish up supper. Fine, whichever. Another thing I did that really helped me was scheduling. Establish routines. Because when you establish routines, everyone knows what's expected of them. Everyone knows what to do, and it will lessen your workload as a mom. It will save you time because your children know exactly what you expect of them, and they can go ahead on their own. And that's why that mom, Jewel, I told you about, didn't have to say a word after the meal was over. Her children knew exactly what she expected of them. She had trained them. So they got up, cleared the table, filled the dishwasher, started it, swept the crumbs. She didn't have to say a word. So it's important to establish those kinds of routines with your children because it really saves you time and helps you a lot. Now, our schedule for many years has been, this is when we're home, it varies when we travel, but when we're home, the children would get up at 6:30, they would get dressed, combed, straighten their room, make their bed, and have their devotions. And then at 7:30, we would have breakfast. And our children would start having their own personal devotions when they could read. Once they could read, we would get them their own Bible. And that varied with the children, you know. But once they could read, they had the prize of their own Bible. And then they would start having their own devotions, reading a chapter. Start in a book that was easy, maybe Psalms or maybe the book of John. Or if that seemed too long, a whole chapter, just read part of a chapter. We wanted them to just get the practice of having their own personal quiet time. Such a way of life with them that it wouldn't be a struggle. It would just not feel right not to do it. And so then at 7:30 we would have breakfast. Now, of course, at first I was the one who made breakfast. But as we started having children, by the time the children were six, I would have them take turns working right along with me fixing breakfast. And once they were older, they could take turns. Sometimes I'd have like the 10 and 12-year-old take turns together fixing breakfast. And I made a schedule. And they knew exactly what to fix. And I would have like a 3-week schedule. Or you can have, you know, some families, my husband happens to like variety. So I made a 2 or 3 week schedule. And we'd just go through that schedule. I had one for winter and one for summer. Because in the winter I liked using the oven because it would warm up the kitchen. And in the summertime I didn't like warming up the kitchen. So I had 2 schedules that would go, one for winter and one for summer. And they knew exactly what they were supposed to make. And then that offloaded me. Then after breakfast, there were chores that I had assigned that every child knew exactly what was expected of them and what they were supposed to do. So when breakfast was over, I didn't have to say anything. They knew what to do. And so they got up and did their chores, and by the time school started at 8:30, the house was in order. And then we could start school. And sometimes, you know, children will try you out. So school was supposed to start at 8:30, and guess what? They try you out, some especially. So 8:30 came, and guess what? Their chores weren't done. So I told them, I said, if you aren't done with your chores by 8:30, then you have to finish them before you come to start school. And I'm going to start the timer. And for every minute you come late to school, whether that was at the kitchen table or some houses we've lived in over the years, we've had a school room, wherever it was, but for every minute you come late, you'll have to go to bed 5 minutes early. So if they came to school 2 minutes late, and their chores had to be done and done right. So if they came only 2 minutes late, that meant they had to go to bed 10 minutes early that night. That meant go to bed before all the rest did. So remember now, 8 o'clock was bedtime. So they had to go at 10 till 8. So usually we would let them read books for, 15 minutes to a half hour, depending on the age of the child. No books that night. Straight to bed. You know what? I never had to do that more than 2 times for any child. It just wasn't worth it. They made sure those chores were done and that they were there at school by 8:30. You know, when I had only a few children, I mean, we started when our oldest one was 6. And so I had 1 in school and 3 that weren't. So now how do I make this work? You know, when I had that situation, I'd just stretch it throughout the day. And again, I really focused on, I wasn't doing all subjects. I'd just stretch it throughout the day. And my goal was to be done by the time it was time for me to start supper. So that meant I could sit down with her for a little bit and do some stuff with her. Now remember, she did already know how to read, so that was done. That had been done in a leisurely pace, so that did make my job easier, yes. But I would sit down with her for a little bit, and then I could get up and do my work and do things with the younger ones, and she could take a break. You know, I thought of it when she was sitting there. We had been planning to send her to school 6 weeks, or was it just a few weeks before school started, we decided to homeschool. And that was a disappointment to her because we had been trying to get her ready to go to school, you know. It's like, okay, here's her lunchbox. And then it's like, okay, we're going to homeschool you instead. She was very disappointed. But, you know, we weren't homeschooling more than a few days. And it was like she'd be sitting there, you know, reading her books. And it was just, she was just, you know, quietly sitting there reading. I could tell she was enjoying it, swinging her feet. And it's like, this is so neat, you know. You couldn't be in a schoolroom of 30 children and allow them all to be sitting at their little tables, swinging their feet, and it's like, that would just be considered disorderly. So it was like, oh, this is so fun. She can just be here and just be relaxed. And so what I'm saying is, at that time, I did just stretch it throughout the day. But then as more and more children started in school, and I switched that to I tried to get the schooling done in the morning and then be done by noon. But, you know, every year I would have to, my first thing was I would make out a schedule and then I would try it out. And if it didn't work, it's like, okay, that's not really working for our family this year. I'd try to change it around a little bit. One year it took me a whole month before I found a schedule that really flowed for our family. That's okay. Don't be afraid to try things and find what's really working for your family this year. You know, life doesn't just stay in one position. It's not static. It moves. And so one year can be very different from the next year. So a schedule that worked for you one year won't necessarily work the next year. Basically, the basics I tried to keep in place was 6:30, get the children up, 7:30, breakfast, 8:30, school starts. But then the school schedule itself varied greatly from year to year. Depended how many children I had, how many toddlers I had, how many, you know, did I have a baby or did I not? That made a big difference. So I tried to remember that to use my schedule as a tool, not as a master. This schedule isn't a master over me. It's just a tool to help me accomplish what I'm supposed to accomplish. So I wasn't an inflexible scheduler. It's like, okay, this time this is supposed to happen, and this time that's supposed to happen. Nothing can shake that or break that. And also, if you try to run your school like a traditional classroom, it will wear you down. Our goal, like I said, was to be tutors, not spoon feeders. We wanted our children to learn to just go on their own so that we would work ourselves out of a job. So you don't need detailed lesson plans. And if you happen to have a teacher's guide with detailed lesson plans, please remember that thing is not your taskmaster. Don't let it be your taskmaster. You don't have to do every single thing it says in that guide. And sometimes, you know, we as mothers feel, well, I'm skipping something, and they're going to skip something important. If you skip something important, it will come up, and you'll realize, oh, we should have learned that, so let's learn it now. You have time to learn it. You don't have to learn everything there is to learn in this 1 year. It's impossible anyway. So go with the flow. And one thing we did is for history and science, I tried to have living books and let them read, read, read. Also, I did that a lot. That will make a big difference in their English. If they read a lot of good material, make sure it's good material. And by good material, I'm not saying only things that have good morals. That's important. But also things that are well written. Things that are very well written. Because they will write like what they read, too. It will teach them. And so if they're reading stuff that isn't really on a high level, literarily, they aren't going to become as good writers. So let them do lots of good reading, and that's where some of those book lists, some like curriculum, and some of those things I mentioned come in, to help you see what is some really good material. And let them read, read, read. And that's going to affect their English. And almost by osmosis, that means, you know, it's just going to go in and they hardly know it's going in. It's going to teach them proper grammar, too. And so you won't need to just bore them year after year after year with lots and lots and lots of grammar. You know, one thing we haven't done with our children is diagramming sentences. Now, some children love that. That's fine if they do. To Ray and I, that just seemed like a waste of time. Sure, they could do it if we taught them how. But that didn't help them learn what we really wanted them to learn. And that is, I want you to learn how to express yourself in writing. And, you know, a mother talked to me one time, and she took them through a curriculum that was very, very detailed with grammar. And they could get 100% on grammar tests. But she said, my children cannot write one paragraph expressing themselves well and in an interesting way. So keep that in balance. Yes, it is important for them to have some grammar so they know how to speak it correctly and use it correctly. But you as a mother are a good one to model that to them. And proper reading really will help them with that. And give them lots of opportunity to write. And then after school was over, let's say at noontime, then we'd have lunch, just a simple lunch. And then we would have chores. Now, those chores after lunch would vary from day to day because it depended what we were doing. You know, is it fall? Is it time to rake leaves, mow the grass? Or is it winter time? You know, is it time to shovel the walks? Those chores would vary every day. So I would list those chores on the chalkboard for the children each day. And when they were done with their chores, they knew that once they were done with chores, the next thing to do was, if they had not completed something that morning in school, they had to finish it. And then once they were done with that, then they had free time. They could do their own creative interests. And I can't stress that enough. It is important for you not to bog your children down with busy work so they have time to pursue their own creative interests. And if you let a child do that, they will just blossom. You know, like Ray said last night, we sent our children to the public school to take their achievement tests, which was required in Indiana when we lived there. And so they stayed there for the day and came home. And I had thought, oh, now this week I'm going to get a lot of extra stuff done. Was that ever a good eye-opener for me? I realized I'm not getting even as much done as I normally do. And why was that? Well, we had to get up in the morning, and I had to waken the baby and the toddler and get them ready to go out too, even though they didn't have to take the tests. But I couldn't leave them at home while I took the children to school. So we all got up, had to eat breakfast quickly, and I fixed it by myself this time. And because I wanted the children to be able to sleep as long as possible so they could do well on their tests. And then we'd go off and they'd be there for the day. Then I had to go pick them up. And guess what? Anything that needed to be done that day, I was the only one to do it. Because my 7-year-old and my 9-year-old weren't there. You know, they couldn't offload me in anything. I was the only one to do all the entertaining, all the changing of diapers, all the everything that needed to be done. And so then I'd go pick them up. They'd come home. They were tired. It's like, you have to run out and play so that you can rest well tonight, so you can get up tomorrow refreshed to take your test and do well on it. Whew, I felt like I was on a treadmill. And after a week of that, it really struck me, even more than me feeling like I was on a treadmill and that I wasn't getting done what I usually did. Our two girls didn't have time to do any of the creative things they usually did. They were busy writing a novel they were making up about World War II, doing research and having a lot of fun writing it. They didn't touch that thing that week. They loved playing the piano. And so they had required practice time, which they did. But usually they went way beyond their practice time, just had fun playing. None of that happened that week. And they would play outside by the hour and find interesting things in nature. And then, that was before the day of the internet, we'd go to the library, get books, you know, discover what they were finding. They learned so much on their own. None of that happened that week. And I realized, our children don't have any time to develop creatively this week. No time to develop their own creativity. That was a big eye-opener to me. And I was very grateful to God for giving me that experience right at the start of homeschooling, so I would realize how important that time was to be truly creative. Now, in saying all this about scheduling, I think that is a very important thing. Moms, if you feel overwhelmed, are you really helping your children learn to do what they should? You know, we were in a home, I guess it was about a year and a half ago by now, and this mom was very, very overwhelmed. They had 5 children, and her youngest one was about 3, and she didn't want any more. It's like, I just can't do another thing. And she was so overwhelmed. And so we were there at their church for 3 or 4 days, and we lived with them. So, you know, I was just listening to the things she would say to me, and she would say things, and, you know, and I'm fixing supper, and I would say, and she had a 14-year-old daughter, and I said, and are you fixing all the meals? Yes. And then she was talking about, and she just felt so bogged down, and she was cleaning this, and I said, and who's doing the cleaning? I am. And she would be talking about something else, and I'd say, and who's doing this? She'd say, I am. And I said, you shouldn't be doing those things. And after I had said that to her enough times, she said, but I just don't know how to have the children help me do it. I said, I'll help you make a schedule. I said, you tell me what you want your children, what you want done in your house every day. What's important to you? What do you want to have happen? And I will help you make a schedule out of all that. So she told me what she wanted to have happen in her house every day, what time they have school, what things she wanted to have done. I helped her make a schedule for school. We made a schedule for the chores the children should be doing. And it was kind of funny. The children would come around, they'd look, what's happening here? You know, because they'd hear us talking. And they were realizing, oh, Mom, what am I supposed to do now? You know, they weren't really sure they liked this new process. But we made a schedule, and I called her back several months later. I said, hey, how's it going? She said, oh, it is wonderful. She said, it made the biggest difference in our family. She said, I even feel like I could have another baby. And it was all because she had learned, and actually she said to me, and guess what? Other mothers are coming to me and they're saying, hey, how should I do this? And so I'm helping them make schedules. So she really had learned. You know, all she needed was just a little bit of help to see where were the weaknesses in how she was doing stuff. And she was very open. She wasn't too proud to say, hey, can you help me do this? And she's doing a great job, and she's loving it. And guess what? Her children are happier too, because they were not happy. They were burdened down too. You know, when mom is burdened down, the children are burdened down too. And suddenly they have a new mom, and yes, they have to do work now that they didn't have to before, but guess what? They feel important in the family now, and they feel fulfilled. So what should preschoolers be doing during school? Well, I had toys that were for school time only, and I would switch those out, maybe weekly or every other week. Another thing I did was, like I said, have older children read to the younger children. And you can do things for them to listen to. You can have singing tapes. One time I made a singing tape of me singing some songs. Let them listen to you sing if you want them to. Or you can make story tapes of their favorite books. Now, I know you can buy story tapes that go with books, but I wanted them to be listening to my voice. So you can make tapes or CDs nowadays. Make them. If you don't know how to do it, your husband does, or I'm sure there's a friend somewhere that knows how to do it. Make it for them. And you know which books your children like, so have them listen to those. They'll love it. Or you can make Bible memory books. I did that with our little children. It was, you know, if we were learning a chapter like Psalm 19, cut out pictures and paste them in and write the text there too. And then you can actually say the verses that go with it on a tape. And they can listen to that over and over and over. And that's another way for them to learn Bible memory. Again, have lots of paper, crayons, pencils available. Don't hesitate to have your baby right there on your lap with you, you know. And many times, you know, if I needed to nurse the baby, school moved out to the sofa. That's okay. Your children are right there around you, and you can be nursing the baby, and school can go on. One thing I learned, though, was that it is very important. I wanted the younger children to be right in there with us, because you know what? They learn so much. I'm sure you've noticed that. You let your older children be in there with the younger children, and they pick it up too. And it's wonderful. It's amazing what they come up with. It's like, wow, what's going in that little brain that I realized? It's exciting. So let your little children be there with you, but they need to learn that they need to be quiet if they're going to be in there. That means if you're in here, then you speak soft. And that is an important lesson for children to learn. You know, I didn't even realize how important that lesson was till we were doing this kind of traveling ministry that we do. And we would be sitting in the living room talking with the adults, and then our children would softly start discussing something. And a woman said to me, "However do you get your children to do that?" And honestly, I had to think. It's like, well, I don't know. How do we do it? It's like, oh. I think this is where it came from, because when we were having a school, I wanted the children to all be together, but the ones that weren't being schooled had to speak softly like this. They couldn't just be out there talking like this, you know, which children like to do. They just like to be loud and noisy, but when they were in the schoolroom, they could talk, but they had to speak softly. That's a benefit. That teaches them to honor other people. So, how can we survive? Well, be committed to make it work. You know, God wants our homeschools to work. He wants them to work. You know, our marriages are successful because we work on making them successful. Our families are happy and successful because we work on making it successful. And the same thing is true for our homeschools. They are successful because we work on making it successful. So we need to be committed to that and delight in submitting every area of our life to God, and then God will make our school a success. Okay, now is this supposed to be a question and answer time? And okay, question and answer time, yes. Pardon me?
How did you train your toddlers to be quiet during school hours?
Well, I tell you, if they wouldn't, you know, sometimes children, Like sometimes, I usually had more until we came to the very last child, of course, but I usually had more than one preschooler at a time. So if it was just too noisy in there, I would tell them, okay, you have to go down to the basement and play, or outside and play if it was, all depending where we lived, if there was a safe place for them to be outside and play. And sometimes I would have them, it depends what age they are, but you also, I did forget to say this, it is very important to give your children things to do. If you just let them be there in the schoolroom, figuring out for themselves what to do, it is going to get noisy. So it actually can be very helpful to make out a little schedule for them. Okay, now while I'm doing this, while we're having school, like from, let's say if you're having, from 9 to 9:30, you're having math. Okay, I'm going to have the toddlers for those first 15 minutes, and it depends on the age and all that kind of thing. For those first 15 minutes, I'm going to let them play with Duplos, if they're that little, or Legos, if they're older. You know, that kind of thing. And for the next 15 minutes, this. In other words, you are the one that is deciding what they're going to do, and they do it. And then that keeps their interest going, and it's not just that somehow this tiny little child has to figure out how to fill up the whole morning. That's too much for them. They don't know how to do that. And then they get unhappy, and then the mother gets frustrated, and it's like, well, you've just told them to do something that it's beyond them. You know, they can't fill up a whole morning on their own. And just talk quietly. So you have to give them things to do in that time. And because little children lose interest quickly, change it frequently enough that they don't get bored. And you know, yes, that takes a little bit of planning on the mother's part. But a little bit of planning saves you miles and hours of work. So take the time to do some planning. And that's why it's important to offload yourself and delegate and have your children help you. Because you know what I found? The more children I had, the more planning it took to have things run smoothly and beautifully. And if you don't have the time to do that, then things just go bumpity, bumpity, bump, and you feel overwhelmed. Yes.
But is it unrealistic to have my 3-year-old play with my, or sorry, 4-year-old entertaining the 2-year-old?
Well, you can answer that better than I can. Do they do a good job, or does it end up with mother having to mediate? If it ends up with mother having to mediate, then it's like they need more direction. Yes. Okay, I'll tell you what I did. We started at 8:30, and the first thing we would do was Bible memory. And I liked having the children memorize books of the Bible as much as possible. Chapters at least, but books too. And so we would do the Bible memory, and then I had a schedule of review too. So, you know, after a while, it was like it took 2 weeks to do all the reviewing. But we would do a little review and work on the new one. And then after Bible memory, I would read a proverb that went along with the day. And I did that for quite a few years because the proverbs are so full of wisdom, I wanted them just to become part of my children. And they did. After doing that for some years, I could read part of the proverb and stop and they could finish it. Not with every single verse, but a lot of them. And then after that, we would have prayer time. And like one day, we would pray for the Christians who are suffering. And one day, we would pray for, have a day of thanksgiving, just things we're really thankful for. One day, we would share personal needs and pray for each other. You know, just that kind of thing, different thing every day. And then we would start our school day. And for the next hour, that was the math hour. So each child worked at their level of math. Now, I used, after they got into fourth grade, I believe it was. Is that where the hard text is, or is it fifth grade? Fifth grade. Once they got into a hard text where I could use the book year after year, then I used Saxon. And one thing I liked about that was it taught them how to learn on their own. They would read the lesson, and I told them, if you don't understand the lesson, the next thing you do is read it again. See if you can figure it out. And then if you can't understand it, you can come to me and tell me, I just don't understand what's going on, and then I could explain it to them. And then they would do the lesson. Then the next day, the first thing they do is check their lesson, fix up any problems that were wrong. Then I can come look over it and see, was that a careless error? I would ask them, was that a careless error, or did you really not understand it? So if they really didn't understand it, that told me, okay, maybe we need to review that lesson again. I need to go over it with them again. If it was just a careless error, it's like, why is it careless? If it happens again, you know. But they did their own checking. For the grades before that, I did a variety of things. You know, for the first several grades, I just used a consumable. And after that, I used Abeka some years. Some years I used Heath Math. You know, I used a variety of things, just whatever. So that first hour was to do that. Now, when the younger ones got done, then they could do something else in that hour. When the older ones, when that hour was up, even if the older ones weren't done, then that was homework. Now, the reason I started doing it like that was I used to do it much more open-ended, but I realized what was happening. Now that I was having older children and younger children, the older children were not using their time wisely. And what was happening was, one would be sitting there reading their history. Hey, listen to this. And they'd read it to the others, and then they'd get this discussion going. And guess what would happen? The whole hour would be over, and they would not be done with their assignment. So that in the afternoon, they had way too much homework to do. And I said to Ray, I said, you know what? Our children aren't learning to use their time wisely. They're wasting their time. They can have those kinds of discussions at the supper table or in the afternoon as they're working together and doing their chores, but they had to learn that now's the time to get the groundwork done, and we're not going to just be talking together. And so that's when I started doing this hour thing. And then the next hour was language arts, and that varied from day to day. That was the day when we did oral reading, spelling, writing, and we didn't do that every day. I divided it up through the week. You know, Friday was a poetry day, when we learned poetry, we read poetry, those kinds of things. And then the next hour was our history and science hour. You know, like I said, 2 days it was history, 2 days science. And they would read. And then they could, if the younger ones got done with reading something, then they could go. But the older ones, I like to have them just read because it was a wonderful time. I mean, here's a whole hour you get to just sit and read something you like to read. And it's amazing how much they can consume in that time. And then, Friday we did extra things like art and that kind of thing. So that was the basic schedule. Any other questions?